Will you turn with me then to Genesis chapter 42? And first of all, verse 1. Now when Jacob saw that there was corn in Egypt, Jacob said unto his sons, "Why do you look one upon another?" And then at verse 7, "And Joseph saw his brethren, and he knew them, but made himself strange unto them, and spake roughly unto them." And then down in verse 9, "And Joseph remembered the dreams which he dreamed of them." The theme that I wanted to consider both this morning and now tonight, we indicated this morning simply, memories in a look. Memories in a look. And there are two particular ways in which that can be applicable in the passage before us this evening. First of all, the way in which they looked, the brothers, they looked one to another. And the way in which they looked revealed the memories they were hiding or running from. And then we have also the way in which Joseph looked upon his brethren and the way in which he remembered the dreams which he dreamt of them. And again, it stands true, memories in a look. So where do we go? The days of waiting are over. Perhaps the waiting was longer than Joseph expected. But there was, as we indicated last week, the vital work of molding his character that had to be done. And as we took our theme last week, the question of timing comes into play in that delay that he might have perceived or that we might see. But when all the pieces were ready, Pharaoh went to sleep and he had a dream. Had two dreams. And then the speed of change simply takes our breath away. It all happens and unfolds so suddenly after that. The circumstances that have been felt for so long to be heavy, with the prison, with his restrictions, with the suffering, it all in a moment was removed or reversed. Again, all a question of timing. The timing and the perfect wisdom of the Lord. One day, Joseph had two changes of clothing and a huge change of circumstances. In the morning, he was in a cell. They called him out of the cell. He was restricted. He was under orders from others dictating what and where he could go and live and spend his days. But now things were so reversed for him. Taken out of cells, dressed to meet the king, and then the king giving him yet further symbols of his rule and authority. Things were so reversed. Now, in the evening of that same day, he had a boundless freedom. He could indulge in the luxury of Egypt. He had authority second only to Pharaoh in the land. What a tremendous change, a question of timing, in the life of Joseph. But now that Joseph was second in command in the land, Joseph was not deluded by the grandeur of the office or the privileges that stretched in front of him. Remember the way in which he was molded in prison, the way in which he was given insight because of the kind of people that were in that prison, the chief and such like of the people of the palace that had fallen out with Pharaoh. They were the ones that were there in prison, and they could give Joseph an inside line and an insight into palace life. And he knew how to hit the ground running, and he knew exactly how to protect his back. He was a stranger after all, and he was watched by so many who resented him being amongst them. There were many that were envious of the power and position that he had. They were just watching and waiting for the slightest slip, and they would pounce without mercy upon him. There were others that were jealous, being second in command, when maybe they thought that was where they should be. And then there was the nation. The nation that felt its need. A nation that never felt need like this before. A nation that was so rich that the people, all they had to do was snap their fingers, and there was a servant there to provide whatever whim they wished for. But now that was being restricted and restrained. Now they had to limit themselves and live by the circumstances of the famine following the years of plenty. And Joseph had to instruct the people. He had to bring this attitude of common sense to them, to prepare for the long term, not just simply to indulge in the years of plenty. Even in these 7 good years, even then there were problems for Joseph. He had, after all, to maximize the growth, to make sure there was plenty of food for the 7 years of famine to come. The luxury of the flooding of the banks of the Nile had to be promoted to the utmost. Dikes had to be built, ditches had to be made, ground had to be prepared, and the best of crops had to be planted. Problems all the way along the line. And then there was the forward planning and the very strict setting aside of the grain to fill up the silos that would provide for the 7 years of famine to come. The temptation in their abundance to sell it and to enjoy it for the moment. These are some of the problems that Joseph had to deal with. The active opposition of interested parties in the power structure in the palace of Pharaoh. The active opposition to his presence, his influence, and his rule. And also beside that active opposition, there was the vested interest. Here he was, putting away a fifth of the harvest every year, taking so much away from them when there was luxury there to be enjoyed and they had the resources to do so with the way in which their crops and their harvests were coming in above the spec, were coming in above their expectations year after year. It was a lovely time to be an Egyptian. And here was Joseph spoiling it for them. Yes, there was active opposition. And there was vested interests. And how Joseph needed wisdom. Strength of character. A touch of humanity. And strong courage to put into effect what he knew to be the best plans for the nation. Now we can see why Joseph had been in prison. To put some steel in his character. To give him that strength to deal with these problems as they would arise. To harden him up. To equip him for service. Yes, there was the preparation of prison. But there was also the promise of the Holy Spirit. And that's the very testimony that Pharaoh himself gives. Just earlier on in the chapter before this, chapter 41 at 38. Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such a one as this? A man in whom the Spirit of God is. The one quality in the life of Joseph that came out, stood out, and was noticed by Pharaoh, that there was something about him where God's presence and testimony was evident and clear. In all of the hard decisions then and discussions, in all of the bargaining and negotiating that had to be done, Joseph never set aside his relationship with God. In fact, it was that very relationship with God which enabled Joseph to be his best. He did not go to work and leave his God at home. He did not go into the pyramids, into the silos. He did not go amongst the fields and mix with the population alone and without the company of his God. He took God with him everywhere he went. Christianity is not to be isolated to one place or one day. We to carry our God with us and to carry our faith with us into the marketplace, into government and into shops. Go back to, yes, even into trade union relationships, because that's the reference I want to give in Ruth chapter 2 and verse 4. There you have Boaz mixing amongst the workers, and he comes and he greets them, and how does he speak to them, and what does he say to them? He exchanges spiritual conversation with them. That's the way in which he took his God, his faith, out into the shop floor, down into the fields, out amongst the workers. That's what we need today. A Christianity that permeates from the highest echelons of government right down through all the departments, the strata, the personnel, right down to ourselves, the grassroots, on the streets, and in the communities. That's what Joseph was doing. That's what Boaz was doing. That's what the scriptures set before us as a pattern. Righteousness, exalting a nation. But there's one other factor I want us to mention before we come to some of the lessons from it. We're getting lessons as we go along. But I want us to think also of the time frame we're now dealing with. What time scale have we got here? We noticed last week that there was 13 years between Joseph going on that first journey on the directions of his father, and the 30-year-old man who was taken out of prison and put into this place of authority. That's the 13 years of Potiphar's house and the prison beside it. Add on to that the 7 years, the good years of the abundant crops. And then you add on a few years at least of the famine being in effect. And that's the time frame we're in at chapter 42. To put it simply, we have about 25 years passed since last these brothers met. Life had come and had an effect upon them all. Look at Jacob, their father. He speaks in the very last verse we read there about the way in which he had grey hairs. He was a man even 25 years later, still speaking with grief and sorrow at the loss of Joseph and the possibility of losing his full brother to Joseph Benjamin. There is a man who was still hurting over the loss of Jacob 25 years later, to such an extent that he wouldn't countenance the thought and the possibility of Benjamin going down into Egypt. I've lost one. I'm not going to lose another. And later on, when Joseph comes to take his father down, we see him going down in a cart. Again, it could be anything that lies behind it, but we can easily see the way in which he is old and decrepit there, and the way in which his spirit is down. That's the passage of time. That's the weight of sorrow that this man is carrying. And he's been carrying it for 25 years. But what about his brothers? The years have washed over them also. And they've been enriched in these 25 years. They've enjoyed an abundance of good things from the hand of their God. But then, one day, with one word, everything is shattered. One day, their father says that fearful word, Egypt. And they began to look at each other. And they began to remember. And they began to think, are we going there? Memories. In a look. Memories that they thought were dead and buried suddenly flashed and flooded their minds. They looked at each other. Their conscience had been stirred up and had kicked in. Just a word. But oh, what effect that word had with them. Egypt. So it is with ourselves. Just a word. But it's a word perhaps that we know that opens the cupboard and the memories for us. And they come tumbling out with that one word. A word that is private and personal to any one of us. But now that I've mentioned the experience, it's a word that's remembered by all of us. A word that stretches back over many a year. We thought we had left all these things behind us. They thought they had left all these things behind them. But they began to look at each other in that furtive way, as conscience that had been shut up for so long, 25 years, shut up in the cupboard. And the cupboard was opened by just one word. Egypt. There was never a journey that was so hard for them to go on. They had been told by their father to go, and they went, but they dragged their feet all the way. Can you imagine? Drop in on the journey as they were going, and you would find the conversation different in different days, but it was all controlled by one thing. Perhaps sometimes there was silence because they knew what everybody was thinking. Or then again, they would talk about anything else but Egypt. The elephant was in the room, but nobody was talking about the elephant. Or then again, they would talk about anything that would distract them away from Egypt. Egypt there, every turn they took and corner they went round, it was there staring them and shouting at them in the face. And as they arrived, and as they met Joseph, so they bowed. They bowed before the one who had been described as the dreamer. Oh, go back to chapter 37 and verse 20, and you find there that they poured scorn on Joseph. Here's the one who is the dreamer. Let's see what happens to his dreams now. A look of recognition this time between Joseph and his brethren. Verse 7. He saw them. And again, when you go from verse 7 to verse 9, there's that flood of memories comes also on this Luke. Perhaps even Joseph had thought from time to time, perhaps even Joseph had thought, well, does God's word fail? The dream now is 20, 25 years old. It's been on the shelf of his mind for all of these years. Perhaps in some time it's grown a little bitty dusty, and maybe he's from time to time asked the question, will it ever happen? He's come through 13 years in prison. He's been through 7 years of bumper harvests. Now he's been through a few years of famine, and still there's no sign of anything happening. Until now. And then he remembered it all. They didn't recognize him. Maybe Joseph had changed a little bit. He spoke a different language. He was in command. No, this isn't our brother. But the amazing ways of the Lord in fulfilling what he had promised and the dream that he had given to Joseph. Over many years, and in the face of great difficulties, it now came to pass they bowed before Joseph exactly as he had dreamt and told them it would be. He made himself known. He did not make himself known, and that was a hard thing for him to do. But he had to test them to see if they were different from when he last met them. They got the rough side of their tongue from him to test their characters. The longest way round is the shortest way home, perhaps, he thought. And so he tells them, to substantiate your story and what you're telling me, get your youngest down here. And prison will focus your mind. And it worked. The conscience that had been dormant for so long was now kicking in. They saw their guilt. They spoke in Hebrew. They thought that Joseph couldn't recognize and understand the language, but he did. And he was reduced to tears. And he went out. And he wept. He hadn't lost that sensitivity in prison. Joseph wasn't gloating. We can all see the possibility. Good, look at them. They're going through the mill. That's where I was. They're now going through it. Lay it on hard. But there was no gloating with him. When he was vindicated, he wept. There's no place for a party in that situation. There's no place for that kind of rejoicing when we're vindicated. The pattern that he gives us is an eminent one to follow. So Simon was kept. The rest returned and their cash was intact. And they couldn't understand when they opened their sack and found their money returned.
They had an arrangement to go back, but Jacob wouldn't go along with it. Perhaps we might think, well, surely things could only get better now. After all, there's Joseph in command. He's in control and the family are in need. But there's a greater spiritual aim to be reached yet. Higher than the relief of hunger. Higher than anything physical. There was a spiritual target yet to be reached. They had to face the bad news about themselves before they could enjoy the good news of their brother in command. So let me just bring all of these things together. And I want to suggest three simple thoughts with a spiritual lesson for them and for us. The spiritual lesson and the spiritual target that is behind and important and vital in chapter 42 of Genesis. First of all, they were in need. They were in need. They started where everyone else started. They were hungry. As long as there was the green hills, as long as they had the fat cows, as long as they had the full store of grain in their barns, there was no thought whatsoever of the wrong they had done against Joseph. Their brothers were content where they were. But God does not leave his people in such a spiritual mess. And sooner or later, things began to happen. And things began to happen by these people, first of all, being in need. There were so many layers laid down, covering up, distracting them from the original fault that they had committed. There were so many layers there, they had to be removed. And how were they going to be peeled away? How were they going to be removed? The way they were going to be removed is, first of all, by feeling a need. The Lord began to remove what made them comfortable. And the Lord was preparing them for what they never dreamt of at all. They were going to meet Joseph. Prepared through a need. The Lord does the same to them and to us. The Lord sometimes removes things out of our lives. Sometimes the Lord dismantles structures, things that we've looked on, hoped and leant on. Sometimes the Lord puts a fork in to loosen the roots, ready for taking them out of our lives. In need, the way he dealt with these people. But the second thing I want us to think of here, not only the way in which he dealt with them in their need, but notice also the way in which they received rough treatment from Joseph. They got the rough side of his tongue and of his actions. It wasn't revenge, clear on that. It wasn't revenge. There was a spiritual necessity about what was being done. There was a spiritual work to be reached and to attained. As a wise father correcting a wayward son, so Joseph felt as much of the pain as they themselves were going through. He was on duty there, one of the big silos. He was there on duty in one of the larger marketplaces. In the midst of all the hustle and the bustle and the coming and the going of people, he saw 10 people. They look familiar. He recognized them. And in that moment of recognition, his heart would have beat faster. What am I going to do? They didn't recognize him. They couldn't remember his face. But they couldn't forget their crime. They last saw him as a 17-year-old spoiled boy. They last saw him when they pushed him onto the back of a camel or a caravan that the Ishmaelites were going down into Egypt. And even as they were coming down in the famine to Egypt, they might have been asking themselves the question, with all of the thought of Egypt in their mind, where is he now? Maybe he's in a chain gang in a field. After all, we sold him as a slave. Maybe he's there gathering in the crops for all of the harvest and he's looking after the building of all these silos. Maybe he's there building bricks for the pyramids. But none of these things were true. Oh yes, he could have easily made a family reunion of it right from square one. He could have made it right at the very beginning, I'm your brother. But he had to test them if they had changed. And there follows a surprising run of events, the rough treatment. Why was he so hard on them? Especially, why did he accuse them of being spies? Why did he use that against them? Well, perhaps he was holding up a mirror to their life now. Perhaps when Joseph, as a young lad, came to meet them in Dothan. Perhaps when he went to see them there, that's what he was accused of. Remember back in chapter 37 and verse 2, there Joseph goes and tells his father about the behavior of some of his brothers. And then his father says, go and find out where the rest are and go to Dothan. And they see him coming and they think, uh-oh, here he comes. And he's come to spy on us again. And he's going to go home and he's going to tell Dad what we're all about. They despised him. They treated him as a spy. And he's doing the same to them as he did to our brothers. And so in verse 18 of chapter 37, they bundled him off to the Ishmaelites. Simeon was the ringleader. He's the one that singled out and kept back. And all of the details that Joseph brought against these people now, they would have all been stimulating their mind. Who did we treat like he is treating us? Who is treating us now in this way? What does he know about us? There seems to be a familiar echo. Maybe there's something here that we've got to pay attention to. The rough treatment, it was there to waken up their memory. Sin. Sin takes a deep root with every one of us, and it is difficult to remove. It's not an easy job, and it's not a short task. To get to the root of sin, we've got to do like Joseph was doing here. We've got to peel back the layers. Get back to the original scene of the offense when they sold him to the Ishmaelites. And they're confronting the original crime. They've got to acknowledge their fault and sue for peace. Go back to the sin at Jericho. God told the people of Israel coming against Jericho, don't touch anything, leave it all, it's all mine. But somebody didn't listen and they took a little bit of the clothing, a little bit of the gold and they took it and they hid it. And then God's people moved on to another city called Ai. And they says, well, we don't need to send so many against Ai, we'll just send a little group. And they went down and they were thoroughly beaten and trounced. And Joshua had to make a decision and to find out, where's the problem here? Where's the fault? And he had to keep on peeling back the layers until he got eventually to Achan, the man who had committed the original fault of taking the gold and the clothing and such like. It's hard, but it's necessary to peel back the layers. God often deals with us in the currency we've used ourselves. And God speaks to us in a language we can understand. That's how Joseph was dealing with his brothers. What goes around comes around. In need, rough treatment. 2 or 3 minutes and we're finished. The third thing, time to think. They have started on a spiritual journey. They've started on the journey by facing up to what they did to their brother. But yet it hasn't run its full course. It hasn't yet fully accepted responsibility for what they've done. If they were let back now, if Joseph had let them go back, they would have said, close shave that one. We got out. Just. They have got to feel the enormity of what they've done. Conscience had more work to do for them. And they needed time. They needed isolation to think. Time to think. So what does Joseph do? Prison. Well, now that's appropriate, isn't it? Where did he spend the best part of 13 years? Joseph had been there already. He knew what a classroom the prison cell could be. He had learned a lot there, and now it was the same for the brothers. They were going to learn a lot where he had been himself. Time to think. And there in prison, there's one person stands out and speaks. This older brother, Reuben. He was a thorn in their side, and he was a prod to their conscience. Back in chapter 37, 21, he was the one that defended Joseph and stopped them from killing him outright. And then again in verse 29 of 37, he's the one that came back to the pit, and his intention was to let Joseph free, but he came back and the pit was empty. So Reuben was always on the side of Joseph. And now, in verse 22, he's the one that accuses them. Did I not say to you, do not sin against the child? And you wouldn't hear. You wouldn't listen. And because you wouldn't listen, his blood is now required of you. And all the while, Joseph was standing there. And he was listening. And he was hiding it all behind a stone wall face. He could understand their language, but he didn't give it away. And he ensured that there was a hostage, that they would return back amongst them. The father and the family thought things were going from bad to worse. But that was a sign for good. They were given food for the journey. They were given food to be at home, and their money was back. And whenever they saw the good things that Joseph had given to them, notice what happens. Their guilty conscience doesn't read it, well, this is great. This is the goodness of Joseph to us. What do? Their guilty conscience makes them afraid even more. What is God doing to us? What is God doing to us? They were great signs of God's care. But they couldn't read them in that way. When the path is heavy, when the path is hard and the load is heavy, when we've got to walk something in the same as Joseph had to walk, look out. Look out for these little signs of care and interest from our God to encourage us. These are the little things that keep us from going down completely. These are the little things that keep us from going over the edge. William Cowper has a hymn which is so appropriate to all that we've been looking at in Providence. God moves in a mysterious way his wonders to perform. He plants his footsteps in the sea and rides upon the storm. And then listen to these words, especially as they would apply to the situation we leave it at tonight. Judge not the Lord by feeble sense, but trust him for his grace. Behind a frowning providence, he hides a smiling face. We need to take time to think of who we are, what we've done, what the consequences of our life are. These thoughts, yes, they can cast us down, down further. We've got to hear the bad news before we appreciate the good news. But if that's the way the Lord is dealing with us and showing us what we really are like, don't be totally downcast. But instead, read your life in the light of Hebrews chapter 12, verses 7 and 8. The very fact that God is taking that interest in you and going to such a trouble to show you yourself and to correct you. The very fact that the interest of heaven rests upon you in that degree, it's an encouragement of his favor and of his blessing to any one of us. A look, the look of a brother, the look of Joseph, a look that was filled with memories. Let us pray. O gracious Lord and God, we truly are a privileged people. We have great, rich thoughts and experiences from thyself. Lord, may we be able to read our own lives in the light of them. And may we see thy working with us and in us, drawing us, calling us, taking us to the foot of the cross. And may we be able to respond in faith and put our faith and our trust in Jesus Christ, thy Son. For we ask these things in his name and for his sake and glory. Amen. We close tonight by singing from Psalm 126, Psalm 126. When Zion's bondage God turned back, as men that dream were we, then filled with laughter was our mouth, our tongue with melody. They among the heathen said, the Lord great things for them hath wrought, the Lord hath done great things for us, whence joy to us is brought. As streams of water in the south our bondage, Lord, recall, whoso in tears are reaping time of joy, and joy they shall. That man who bearing precious seed and going forth doth mourn, he doubtless bringing back his sheaves, rejoicing, shall return.